This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Mark Kermode, good afternoon to you.
You know who I am?
Yes.
Good.
Unmistakably, Mark Kermode, with some movie reviews and conversation coming up between now and 4 o'clock, with any breaking news stories coming along at the same time. I'm sure Mayo at bbc.co.uk, 85058. Reviews coming up, we hope, for Arthur and the Invisibles, Dreamgirls, Gridiron Gang, Notes on a Scandal, Running with Scissors, and the one I haven't seen a poster for, Welcome to Dongmugol. Dongmugol.
Which was the South Korean entry for the best foreign language film, although not accepted. Wrongly so, I have to say.
So we'll do a box office top 10. Your comments, of course, more than welcome on any and other topics. At number 10, Venus.
You know, Peter O'Toole...
Should be higher than that, shouldn't it?
Well, it's a small opening, won't it? It'll be a sort of platform opening that will then go wide later on. Peter O'Toole up for Best Actor Oscar for the 8th time. As you know, when he got his honorary one, he nearly turned it down on the grounds that he wanted to win it outright. But I think he's got a tough gig up against Forrest Whitaker.
So it just has a small opening with a much wider opening...
Later on.
To come.
Yes. Moving swiftly on.
Going into Frankie Howard territory far too early.
Oh, that's not Frankie Howard, is it? That was
No. We've already had Pat Murphy doing impressions.
Yeah, somebody said to me that you were doing an impression of me doing an impression of David Beckham. Kevin Day said to me, he said, Simon Mayer has been doing an impression of you doing an impression of David Beckham. You must ask him about it.
No, I think that was you. I think he's just getting confused. Earlier we had Pat Murphy doing an Australian... Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I'm lost.
Happy Feet at 9.
You know, let's be nice to those seabirds as long as they can tap dance. It's hung around for a long time, though, hasn't it? I mean, it's longer than was perhaps necessary, frankly.
Casino Royale at number 8.
Good to see Bond still holding his own, and he's up for Best Actor at the BAFTAs a week on Saturday, and a possibility of winning, I suppose.
If Casino Royale didn't get a nomination for an Oscar, it's never going to get one, is it, really?
No. No, but I mean the BAFTA, you know, thing is the notary. But it's not, you know, Bond movies are not made for your consideration, shall we say? They're made, you know, for audiences.
Stand by for another impression at 7. Miss Potter.
Oh, I'm Renée Zellweger. I'm going to be Miss Potter in this movie. I've really researched the role a lot. I read one of her books and discovered that she lived in Wales, or was it Scotland? I'm not quite sure.
Babel at 6.
Shot rings out, echoes around the world. Brad Pitt has grey hair, Kate Blanchett has a bad time. We end up in Japan for reasons which are completely unclear. It's meretricious nonsense.
Do the Americans refer then to the Tower of Babel?
I don't think they do, I just think they're being foolish. I mean, it is the Tower of Babel. I don't care how they say it, it is the Tower of Babel. The film is called Babel, and for Americans to say Babel, and that's the best thing, they're not even saying Babel, they're saying, oh yes, Alejandro González Iñárritu's new movie, Babel. And it's like,
yeah,
yes.
And that talking pig movie was not Bab.
No, it was Babby.
We have The Last King of Scotland, this week's number 5.
I think Forrest Whitaker is going to win for his portrayal of Idi Amin in The Last King of Scotland, which is a very, very good film.
Night at the Museum, this week's number 4.
Why is it still hanging around? You know, it's finally on the way out, but it's been an awfully long time.
People like it?
Well, you know, people are shallow and vacuous and should think better.
It's our audience you're addressing.
No, I don't think it is our audience going to see The Night at the Museum. What I think it may
be
is...
You've seen Night at the Museum and you are not vacuous.
Hang on.
You did enjoy
If you went to see Night at the Museum for yourself, not if you took your kids to see it because it was half term or it was Christmas holidays and you felt like I have to go and take my kids to see it, which is a slightly different matter, which we will address when we move on to the review of Arthur and the Invisibles.
Right, but
if you chose,
if you're
to go
an adult
and, see it,
and you chose to go and see it just for fun, you are clearly vacuous. That's your position.
Yeah.
Okay. Mayo at bbc.co.uk. The Pursuit of Happiness with a Y at number 3.
You know, and the Y I think is ringing out. Why? Oh, why? Oh, why?
Blood Diamond at 2.
I like it. I'm apparently not on speaking terms with Leonardo DiCaprio, but there we go.
Well, you were very rude to him. How would you describe?
I wasn't very rude to
how
him.
How would you describe his face, his facial expression, as you said again? I've just about forgiven you for Titanic, which really, having said that to a very famous star, you need to get over it and not mention it again. No, but how would you describe his look towards you?
Here's the thing. I feel that if people can't take, you know, gentle ribbing, or a little bit of, which incidentally he can do, then they should get over themselves. I mean, you know, hey, he's a big boy. He's got enough in the bank to cushion the blow.
But how would you describe that look?
I would describe it as blank, is how I would describe it.
I was thinking of Idi Amin. Really. Blood Diamond at 2. Rocky Balboa is the UK's number one movie.
And what a pleasure it is to see that up there, because I enjoyed Rocky Balboa. I mean, we're not allowed to call it Rocky 6, because it isn't. It's Rocky Balboa. And it's completely stupid, but it's got all the stuff in it that you need. I mean, it takes a little bit of time to get going, but when they start hitting each other in the ring, it's just good, honest, nonsensical fun. And it's a guy's movie, absolutely. And there we go. But I did feel, you know, I felt the testosterone pumping as I sat there.
Graham in Durham says, Dear Mark and Simon, or maybe that should be Simon and Mark, which he puts in brackets, having just searched online for Pan's Labyrinth DVD prices, I came across one website which provided advice as to what other DVDs people who had bought Pan's Labyrinth were also buying, which posed an interesting... I think it's not out on DVD.
It's not, but it'll be one of those order now, we'll give it to you in June.
It posed an interesting question for the good doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Is his pleasure that people are buying this film outweighed by the despair that the top film that other customers are also purchasing is Pirates of the Caribbean 2. Is mass sales of Pirates 2 a worthy sacrifice if people also buy Pan's Labyrinth? It's a modern,
but you know,
moral maze.
But you know what that's like? It's like there's a Venn diagram thing going on there, right? It's, you know, all elephants are grey, therefore all grey things are elephants. The week that Pirates of the Caribbean 2 opened, and I may be slightly misquoting this, but it was something insane, like 1 in 5 of all DVDs sold was Pirates of the Caribbean 2. I mean, in an act of mass hysteria, the country went out and bought Pirates of the Caribbean. Now, what that means is, if you go to almost any movie on one of those websites, it'll say, customers who bought this also bought Pirates of the Caribbean 2, because 1 in 5 people also bought Pirates of the Caribbean 2.
But you would imagine that people who've bought Pan's Labyrinth, in other words, it's something that they don't just want to go and see, they want to own it, with a view to watching it again and again, and then maybe watching all the extras and the outtakes, the director's commentary, also wanted to purchase Pirates.
No, I see it the other way around. I see it as a sort of evangelising thing. There are people who have foolishly gone out and actually bought Pirates of the Caribbean 2, which is out now, and they realise that their lives are hollow and empty and shallow and really in need of some kind of spiritual guidance, and they're reaching out now. They're reaching out for something with which to flagellate their souls and make themselves better. And Pan's Labyrinth is the particular whip that they have chosen, and good for them.
What a deluded world you live in, a conclusion which we come to not for the first time. Courtney in London says, Simon and Mark, last week I found myself in what can only be described as a hitherto undescribed circle of hell, otherwise known as Archway's Woolworths. I stopped in on my way to the video store as I needed some DVDs to pass time while I sat at home with the dreaded January cold. I was shocked, saddened, but undeniably pleased to find that History of Violence, undoubtedly the best film of recent years, as heralded by the good doctor, was on sale for £3.
Really?
Yes, £3.
I hope you snapped it up.
Not sure what to say besides what's wrong with the general public. To compound the insult, Little Man was £11.
Well, that's just so you know, you pay more, but it makes you worse. That History of Violence DVD instead is great. It's got a really good making-of doc on it. It's about sort of 55 minutes. They go through every single scene. It's really, really good.
What do we have that's completely new, Dr. Kermode?
Dreamgirls, which, if you remember, when we were doing the Oscars nominations simulcast...
That's right.
I think that was what it was referred to.
A BBC News special.
It was. I think it was groundbreaking. It's 8 Academy Award nominations, although critically not the biggies. I mean, not up for Best Film, which I caught some people slightly by surprise because it had won Best Musical or Comedy at the Golden Globes. This just goes to prove, incidentally, that old rule about the Academy Awards and musicals and comedies is true. Very often, you'll get something that actually wins in the musical or comedy category in the Golden Globes that doesn't even get nominated in that category. And I remember when Nicole Kidman won Best Actress Musical or Comedy for To Die For and didn't even manage to get Oscar nominated. So it does happen quite regularly. So now, Dreamgirls, which is nominated for 8 Academy Awards, including Eddie Murphy and Jennifer Hudson for Best Supporting Actor and Best Supporting Actress, respectively, they both won at the Golden Globes. The story is a great big upbeat, hoofing, zhuzhy, post-Chicago, but much better than that style, nostalgic musical about the rise of a girl group whose story bears great similarity to the story of Diana Ross and the Supremes. It stars Jamie Foxx and Beyoncé Knowles, but in fact, the co-stars, Eddie Murphy and Jennifer Hudson have pretty much stolen the glory. Okay, so the really interesting thing about Dreamgirls is there's this weird parallel between the way in which the movie is worked out, it's a stage show movie, and the story which it kind of takes its inspiration from. In the case of Diana Ross and the Supremes, the story was always that Diana Ross ended up leading the Supremes. She didn't have the best voice, but she looked the best and she sounded the kind of blandest. And in the story of Dreamgirls, there's a moment in which Beyoncé Knowles gets to sing lead as opposed to Jennifer Hudson because she looks better, and also because she's told by the guy played by Jamie Foxx that, you know, your voice, it's a bit more bland. And, you know, for that reason, we need you out front because what we're trying to do is get the kind of the white bread audience. And there is a fairly, you know, reasonable subtext in this about what happened to the blandification of black music in order to get it on the white radio stations. It's a fairly well-rehearsed story, but it's done quite well, that, you know, blues and soul and gospel was a form of music that was turned into a sort of watered-down, milkier version in order to be sold to the American public. Because for a long time, there was a complete division between white and black music. You'd know this, you're a music DJ, why am I teaching my grandmother to suck eggs?
Because you're not just broadcasting to me.
No, but I feel like I am, Simon. I feel like our arguments are just between you and
that
me.
May
yes,
be
fine.
True.
Of course, what's happened is that Jennifer Hudson, who plays the one who's got the really, really great voice, but doesn't have perhaps the spectacular looks of Beyoncé Knowles. Apparently, she was on American Idol. This is a very well-known story.
She came ninth.
Like, you know, did not. I mean, she was a finalist, but she didn't win. And yet, wow, can she sing? And in the course of the movie, her character gets sidelined because she doesn't quite look right, but she can really, really sing. And the Beyoncé Knowles character actually ends up looking, well, much as people who are purists about Diana Ross and the Supremes say, like somebody who ended up as a false pretender to the throne. Of course, in the case of the movie, actually all the attention has been on Jennifer Hudson, who is really, really good. She can really sing. She can really, she's come completely out of nowhere. She came 9th or 10th or 15th or whatever it was in American Idol. And now here she is with a Golden Globe already under her belt, an Oscar nomination, which I think she's got a pretty good chance of getting, and a BAFTA nomination for Best Supporting Actress, which I think she's really, really a shoe-in for. So almost out of nowhere, this person has got this extraordinary recognition. And this, if you were Beyoncé Knowles, which you're not, clearly, but if you were...
Nicely observed.
Yes, you might feel, I wonder exactly how that happened. The other thing which is surprising, and there's been an awful lot of critical sniffiness about the movie over here, people saying, well, you know, it's just a musical, and people keep bursting into song like they do in musicals. You know what? It's because it's a musical. If you don't like musicals, get over it. Musicals are great. You know, Singing in the Rain, fabulous. On the Town, fabulous. You know, Seven Brothers, fabulous. What's the problem? Musicals,
some
great.
Musicals are great. Clearly not musicals are great. That clearly is not.
The musical form is a great form that almost got resurrected a few years ago when Woody Allen did Everyone Says I Love You. Actually, funnily enough, Priscilla Queen of the Desert was the beginning of the sort of modern musical form. That was the point which Stephen Elliott said that he had to reinvent the musical, which had been killed stone dead by Xanadu. He said the most amazing thing about Xanadu is that somebody went into a meeting and pitched it and said, here's the plot. I'm doing it in Australian accent because this is how Stephen Elliott did it. The great god Zeus sends his only daughter Zira down to Earth to open a roller disco. And they said, fine, brilliant, have Olivia Newton-John and everybody else and it'll take millions of pounds.
Olivia Newton-John, OBE, of course.
Your grace. So anyway, moving swiftly on, the other great thing about it is Eddie Murphy, who we remember as being rubbish recently in, well, almost everything, frankly, Daddy Daycare and Pluto Nash and
Dr. Doolittle was all right.
No, it wasn't. Okay. No, original Dr. Doolittle, incredibly erudite, funny, you know, well done. Eddie Murphy, Dr. Doolittle, it's lots of animals breaking wind. Now, I don't have anything against breaking wind jokes, but it's kind of like redoing My Fair Lady, but with just every now and then somebody goes, oh, pardon me, Vicar, more tea, doesn't work. So the thing...
makes me laugh.
The thing he's most famous for recently is being the voice of the talking donkey in Shrek. And now comes back Eddie Murphy, and you think, I'll have to take back all those things I said about him, because he does this performance which is a bit James Brown and a bit Little Richard and a bit Marvin Gaye and a bit Eddie Murphy, and it's really good. Now, I didn't like Chicago very much because I thought it was, you know, directed to within an inch of its life, and every time somebody's foot hit the floor, there was a cut and you couldn't see anything being done. But I prefer this. I don't think it's a masterpiece. I think there are things wrong with it, but I really enjoyed it. And I think it has enough of a solid backbone of a story that's actually about what happened to the music business. And it's close enough to the story of Diana Ross and the Supremes to be interesting, although it's not, I would say, in the same league as, for example, Grace of My Heart, which is absolutely mighty, which is the fictional story about a character who's clearly based on Carole King. And in that story, she goes on to marry Brian Wilson, who then drowns in the sea, which, of course, didn't happen in real life. That was the other one. So it's not Grace of My Heart, but it's not Chicago either.
Dan in Derbyshire says, no need to wait till June, Mark. Pan's Labyrinth is released on DVD 12th of March.
Is it?
And the Amazon website suggests purchasing it with Children of Men.
Oh, well, that's a much better suggestion. Of course, Alfonso Cuarón, who directed Children of Men, is the exec producer on Pan's Labyrinth.
Phil on the M6 says...
The Mexicans are coming.
Phil on the M6 says, I'm not on speaking terms with Leonardo DiCaprio either.
Good.
We've invented a new word. Thank you to a number of people for pointing this out. Brian and Ballybunion amongst them.
Yeah.
Wittertainment. If you look at the Wikipedia. Wikipedia's a...
I know what the Wikipedia is. It was the word before that.
Wittertainment. A term... I'm reading now from Wikipedia.
Right.
Wittertainment. A term inspired by the good Dr. Mark Kermode's film reviews on Simon Mayer's Five Live show. Suggested usage. Wittertainment at its most...
Wittertaining.
In a nutshell... It says, in a nutshell, Kermode, the barrel-chested former Queen's Guardsman, is provoked into...
What?
Exactly. Is provoked into... The first bit was right. Is provoked into ranting by the urbane and erudite Mayo, a perfect foil for the...
Oh, you've written this, haven't you?
Nope, for the discontemporarily coiffed Kermode. The ensuing witter is surprisingly entertaining. Kermode is undoubtedly a man of many words, a small few of which he unfortunately uses very often. For dedicated podcasters... It causes time to pass unnoticed. That's the sum of our achievements.
That's it, yes.
We cause
you
time to pass unnoticed.
You won't even know we were here.
And he says, a not inconsiderable but much appreciated feat while driving in contemporary urban Ireland.
Excellent.
There you go. So, Wittertainment at its most...
It's the former Queen's Guardsman. Are they calling me a queen? I don't mind that, but it's the Queen's Guardsman.
Apparently it's inferred from your photo, which they've seen somewhere. Anyway, enough of that. The podcast is available as a podcast for this show on a daily basis. There's a Mark Kermode podcast as well, which has been referred to. You can sign up to it via the Five Live website, bbc.co.uk/5live. You can also do it via iTunes in the normal way.
How much wittering would you like, sir?
Well, I would like wittering at its wittertaining.
We invented the word. You can't even do it.
I don't even know how to use it. Catherine in Manchester, thank you for hating Babble, Babel, Bubble.
I go to
the cinema every 2 weeks and have never wanted to walk out of a film since Adam's Family Values 16 years ago. And only respect for the director made me stay. Awful. What are the Academy thinking?
Yeah, exactly.
You were slagging off Night at the Museum, saying it's only for vacuous people.
Yes, here we go.
Miles in Manchester.
How old?
I am part of your audience and an intellectual, he says. That's how he starts.
Okay. So
now, don't you think that's for other people to judge? I mean, it's quite interesting. I mean, he is described himself... I'll come to the essence of it,
yes.
But he's described himself as an intellectual.
He may be a professor.
He may well be right. I saw Night at the Museum with two other adults. It is an excellent and educational kids' movie.
Eh?
That's it. That's his assessment of it. And he's an intellectual.
How old is he?
He doesn't say how old. I haven't asked people to include their age as we go through it.
No, anyway. I'm just interested to know, you know.
Intellectual, I mean, I don't know. How does he spell
intellectual?
If you actually are an intellectual, I think you should let us know as to whether you've actually ever described yourself as an intellectual, because I'm sure it's one of those things that you... Probably wouldn't. Anyway, we must squeeze in as many reviews as possible.
Yeah. Shall we leap ahead and quickly and do...
Do next week's movies?
No. Shall we do Arthur and the Invisibles now? Okay, because I don't want it to get lost because I know people... You know,
is this for intellectuals?
No.
Will Miles in Manchester enjoy it, do you think?
Well, it depends how old Miles in Manchester is. The question before was, on the subject of Night at the Museum, right, was whether anybody goes to see it because they want to go and see it, or whether they go and see it because their kids want to go and see it.
He went with two other adults, so he clearly is an adult.
He claims that he is an intellectual who went with two other adults.
Well, he claims he's called Miles.
And the film is educational. Now, I would say, you know, far be it from me to cast aspersions on that, but it's, you know, I'm surprised by that. So now we have Arthur and the Invisibles, which is the latest animated romp. Incidentally, wasn't it great news to hear that Aardman are going it alone without DreamWorks? Who needs DreamWorks? They want Plasticine, you know. Jeffrey Katzenberg.
They said Were-Rabbit lost money in that report.
I know, but that's just the most insane thing, wasn't it? That, you know, the Curse of the Were-Rabbit underperformed. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Katzenberg. You know, we would all love to underperform in that way. I've been on stage with Jeffrey Katzenberg. He called me an idiot.
He's about right.
He was about right, yes.
Have we got distracted?
Yes. Animated feature from Luc Besson, right? And Luc Besson is a really strange old... But Luc has announced, incidentally, this is the last film he's going to direct, and there has not been a great wailing and gnashing of teeth as a result of this. Besson started out doing things like La Femme Nikita, or Nikita, I think, as it was called over here, and Subway. And then he made The Fifth Element. And then he kind of set fire to his career with Joan of Arc, which was a bit bad. And I saw Joan of Arc in, I think it must have been in Cannes, And they'd had such trouble with Joan of Arc, with the lead actress. They finished it, they did reshoots, and she came out and did more reshoots. And her hairstyle is never twice the same in any two, that even when she's not actually in the conflagrational stages. I mean, things are. It really doesn't make a
you
whole bunch
away
of sense.
The ending.
What, the end of Joan of Arc?
Yeah.
Only one, fine. And you know what happened to St. Catherine as well? Or should I not spoil that for those of us who are going to enjoy Fireworks Night? So anyway, he then got into producing a whole lot of really, really rubbish movies, like he did that, you know, the Taxi series recently. I mean, it just really bad films. And now he's turned up as the writer and director, writer also of the books of Arthur and the Invisibles. The story of Arthur and the Invisibles, and pay attention here, because it's a kid's movie, but it's quite complicated. 10-year-old Arthur, right, lives with his grandmother, played by Mia Farrow. Grandmother is in a house that they're going to lose the deeds to because grandfather disappeared some time ago and he came back from his exploring a while ago and he buried some rubies in the garden. They can't find the rubies, and unless grandfather comes back before 12 o'clock tomorrow, they're going to get the house taken away. So Arthur gets a magic telescope which shrinks him down to miniature size, goes into a hole in the ground and meets the Minimoys. The Minimoys are played by, well, such great voice artists, in the English language version at least, as Robert De Niro. Remember him? From Shark Tale. Not from Raging Bull or from Taxi Driver or from King of Comedy. No, Robert De Niro from Shark Tale. The Robert De Niro who can't do animated voiceovers, because that's not what he does. Harvey Keitel, the Bad Lieutenant. When was the last time you saw a cartoon and thought, you know, I think that really, really needs Harvey Keitel? The Princess is played by Madonna.
By the way, if you do ever see Mark walking around the street, and remember, he's the former...
Barrel-chested former Queen's Guardsman.
Former Queen's Guardsman. Ask him to tell you his Harvey Keitel story. This is a story...
Yeah, it can't be broadcast.
Can't be broadcast, but is an absolute belter.
And I promise you, if you do ask me, I will tell it to you as long as we're in impolite company.
It's a 15 and above.
Oh, it is. It's definitely. It's an R18 rated story. And then the baddie, played by David Bowie, who has escaped from
another impression. Add it to the list.
And there's the star.
No more.
Did you see The Prestige? I spent the whole of The Prestige watching David Bowie going, what accent are you doing? I really don't know. I'm not being funny. Is it Scottish? Is it German? It's a bit Romanian. Oh, it's got a bit Swiss. And I think it turned out in the end to be, it's like Latvian or something really bizarre. It's like that bit in, Crimson Tide. The other submarine
Red
movie.
October?
Yes, when Sean Connery is speaking Russian and then he starts speaking Scottish and the bloke says, don't worry about him, it's because he's from the Ukraine.
But David Bowie was playing the only real character, wasn't he?
He was playing a real character.
Tesla. Who's,
Tesla. And where's he from in real life?
Oh, I don't know. Someone will tell
me.
David's
imminently. Accent was not from this world.
What's the connection?
Because David Bowie in this does yet another David Bowie, you know, it's my voice performance. And the problem with the film, many problems with it. First, it makes no sense. It's incredibly complicated. It goes nowhere. It's really, really badly written and it's a bit dull. Some of the animation is perfunctorily all right done. But when you've got Robert De Niro, Harvey Keitel, Madonna and David Bowie, you do expect a little bit more than this. The last movie that Luc Besson directed was Angel A, which gave Vacuity a bad name. I mean, it was a really, really bad, empty film. And then along comes this, and I want to enjoy it because my kids, you know, will want to go and see it because there's posters for it everywhere. And you think, but believe me, if you take your kids to see it, you're going to get the Shark Tale experience all over again. You're going to sit there thinking, why is Robert De Niro doing this? You're going to sit there thinking, how do I feel about the fact that Madonna is playing the love interest to a kid? Because it's completely unrequired. You know, Madonna's character, I think, is 4,000 years old and the kid is 12.
That's all right,
you know,
then.
But it's Madonna, right? Who's not the best actress in the world when she's not singing. She's great in Evita. The best performance she ever did was in a film called Dangerous Game, in which she played a really rubbish actress. And she was great at that. And I'm sure that Abel Ferrara didn't tell her that's what she was doing. But this is, it's star-studded, it's big, it's zhuzhy, it's noisy, it's empty, it don't go nowhere, it's badly written, don't make any sense, and it's a bit dull.
What's the connection between Joan of Arc and The Prestige?
Joan of Arc and The Prestige, they both should have gone up in flames?
Little Catholic girl who's fallen in love, face on a page, a gift from above.
Little Catholic... Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark.
Who did Tesla Girls.
Who did Tesla... Well done.
There you go.
Very good. Weren't they Scottish? Again, he was another person. He was actually Scottish, but he sang like he was French.
No, who's Scottish?
The singer in Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark.
Mr. McCluskey?
Yeah, McCluskey. Really? Let's go no further. Q, and if you will, ED. But he sang in that way that made it sound like he was French.
Hamish McCluskey.
Hamish McCluskey,
I don't think he was. He certainly didn't sound it. Anyway, Mark is going to extend himself now and read an email.
I'm a ditch digger, and core blimey, that intelligent chap begging his pardon and all is obviously a proper gent, and it's not for the likes of you to sneer.
Very good. That's very impressive. Orchestral Manoeuvres in the Dark.
Yeah.
From the Wirral, I think.
Even right.
Though, and just because he's called McCluskey.
That's be the Wirral just left of Glasgow, would it?
Just because he's called McCluskey, and it was Andy McCluskey, doesn't make him Scottish.
He still sung. I didn't say he sounded Scottish, as he sounded French.
Miles in Manchester, the intellectual. Has provoked this from Tom in London, who's 21, because this is a new stipulation from Mark. If you're going to actually take part in the conversation, you have to tell us how old you are.
Yeah.
Maybe the other two adults your intellectual went to the film with were his parents. And he'd like, and he'd also like.
That's very good.
To send him his Harvey Keitel story. It's not.
No, it's not something I want to commit to paper.
And this email says, "I have never described myself as an intellectual." That's signed yours, S. Seagal.
Very good.
No, that's also.
But he has described himself as a musician, which appears to be.
Well, on the basis of his CD, we spoke to him on the basis of his CD. He's a better musician than actor. That would be my opinion.
Yeah, he's probably a better hat stand than actor.
Unfortunately,
frankly,
as most members. The audience will testify. He can't actually talk about it.
No, he can't actually act and talk either. You
at
know.
The same time.
No, he could just he just hits things. Anyway, should we do another film?
I think you should.
Well, we've got two to knock out of the way. So, Notes on a Scandal, which again up in the running for the Oscars, Dame Judy, who looks like a contender for Dame Helen. It is definitely the Battle of the Dames, adapted from a novel by Zoe Heller by Patrick Marber. Now, see, Patrick Marber wrote Closer. Which, as you remember, I really...
One of your favourites.
...hated it. I don't think he's a bad writer. I just really didn't like that. And I'm not a huge fan of his writing, but he clearly is a very, very talented bloke. Anyway, I haven't read the novel, but we were told for a long time that it was unadaptable because it's to do with internal monologues, which is a subject you were discussing the other day with Nigel Floyd. Story is that Judi Dench is an elderly teacher at a school. Along comes Cate Blanchett as a new sort of young pottery teacher. Judi Dench becomes obsessed with her and then discovers that the Cate Blanchett character is having a fling with one of her pupils. Judi Dench's character then uses this as a kind of emotional crowbar against the Cate Blanchett character, and it all goes a little bit bunny boiler. Insistence score there by Philip Glass, who's also been nominated. I'm going to get on my alarm clock the sound of Judi Dench going, "You're not young!" Because I think that is something which reverberates particularly. The interesting thing about Notes on a Scandal is it's not a great film.
Young, but you are barrel-chested.
And a former Queen's Guardsman. It's directed by Richard Ayres, and I don't think that he or Patrick Marber have quite solved what are clearly the problems in adapting the novel, which, as I confess, again, I haven't read. I think Judi Dench's performance is great. I think in any other year she would have had a strong case with this. But unfortunately this year, of course, well, not unfortunately, this year she's up against Dame Helen Mirren, who is going to win the Oscar for Best Actress for her portrayal of the Queen. And so it's pretty much a one-horse race. Having said that, whenever you predict that kind of thing, you know, it then doesn't happen. And it'll end up being won by, well, Abigail Breslin will win in the supporting actress category or something silly will happen like that. I'm not quite sure how wide the audience for this is, and I'm not quite sure how successful it is as a piece of drama. Some people have reviewed it saying it's absolutely fantastically observed in the way in which it dissects the unpleasant manners of the situation. As I said, I don't think it's that gripping. I think it's much more formulaic than perhaps it thinks it is. But there's a great supporting performance by Bill Nighy as Cate Blanchett's put-upon husband. Judi Dench really does chew the scenery up in a good way. And see, I was never crazy about Mrs. Henderson Presents. And one of the nice things about it is it's really nice to see Judi Dench do nasty. It's really nice to see her do, you know, borderline Hannibal Lecter. It's really nice to see her do threatening and difficult and really, really cross, because she has got immense fire. And she's a very, very scary screen presence in some scenes in this film. And the film is kind of worth it for those scenes.
Some people have observed about her in this film kind of saying she's sort of, it's very easy for her to walk through a movie because she gets cast as Judi Dench.
But in this she isn't. No, that's the point. In this she isn't. She's not the lovable person who turns up for 7 minutes as Queen Elizabeth and gets an Oscar for Shakespeare in Love, thank you very much. She's not the person who does Mrs. Henderson Presents and is incredibly lovable and we all, you know, and all that stuff. She doesn't do that. She's not the person who plays Queen Victoria to Billy Connolly's Gilly in, you know, Her Majesty Mrs. Brown. It's a tough performance. It's an unlikable performance, and that I think is the film's strongest suit. And finally, before we run out of time, just a quick mention for Running with Scissors. which is based on the memoirs of Augustine Burroughs, and theoretically, therefore, I think based to some extent in truth, although the truth seems sort of terribly unlikely, a period setting about this young man whose mother, played by Annette Bening, goes off the rails and dumps him with Brian Cox, mad psychiatrist played by Brian Cox. The film itself is quirksome to the point of irksome.
Quirksome? Are you quirksome. Going for another word?
No, quirksome's fine.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Irksome
and quirksome is
irksome and quirksome.
Unique.
Is it?
I think so.
Fine. Well, but it is that whole thing with things which are offbeat, wacky, kooky, zany, left of field, a little bit off kilter. A very little bit of that goes a very long way. And in this case, with the exception of Brian Cox's performance, which he's always, you know, watchable. There's a new Hannibal movie coming up. It's rubbish, obviously. Brian Cox was the greatest Hannibal.
Yes, yeah. You don't know because you haven't seen it.
What?
The new Hannibal movie.
Of course I've seen it.
Oh, you have seen it?
Yeah.
So when you say it's rubbish, obviously.
Yeah, well, it's rubbish.
Obviously rubbish because...
Well, because it's rubbish.
Right, good argument.
I mean, no, but I have seen it, and
it's
I'm
like
telling you, it's rubbish.
My 7-year-old.
It's my job.
You've argued me around. I'm convinced.
Well, what do you want me to do? Do you want me to do the review of it now, or do you want me to wait till next week?
Wait till next week.
Fine, okay. But I'll give you a sneak preview.
It's rubbish.
And then also, I want to say very, very quickly, this film, Welcome to Dogma Cult, which is a South Korean movie, and the best way of describing it is Bill Forsyth once described Local Hero as Brigadoon meets Apocalypse Now. And actually, that description would fit for Welcome to Dogma Cult. The story is, in the middle of the Korean War, South Korean and North Korean soldiers end up stuck together in a village. You've seen Hell in the Pacific, right?
Be brief.
You've seen Enemy Mine.
Be brief.
Fine. American soldiers there as well. They all discover that actually there's this magical world away from the war, and it's really very good. It was put forward for a Best Foreign Language Oscar, but didn't qualify. Shame.
Matt in Leighton Buzzard. So you can tell Mark regarding the aforementioned DVD release of Pan's Labyrinth. The website of a well-known high street music retailer has an exclusive box set of Pan's Labyrinth, Devil's Backbone and Kronos for $17.99.
Really?
How's that for a bargain? Movie of the week.
Well, Dreamgirls, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Why? Why does everyone do that when I go? I mean, why? It's a, you know, it's a big zhuzhi musical and I liked it.
Zhuzhi being defined as?
You know, razzmatazz, hoofing, high kicking, knees up Mother Brown.
It has been wittertainment at its most.
Wittertaining.
Mark, thank you. Have a good weekend.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.